for him to take time out of his busy schedule to be on our show, Bud, and we do appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
And, you know, I can't urge people enough to go over there to the intrudersfoundation.org site because, like you say, you have these once a month you have these seminars, and next month, as far as I can tell, this unnamed fellow is going to be really breaking some new ice.
Absolutely. Well, that's a really major event, and it happened 30-some years ago, and he still hasn't really recovered from it.
Yeah, I will know. And these UFO objects that they were shooting at were 2 or 3 feet off the ground, going at tremendous speeds, huh?
Well, actually, they weren't going at the tremendous speeds when they were first seen. They were coming rather slowly, but they zoomed away finally at a very great speed.
And that was at a SAC Air Force base.
Right on the flight line with B-52s sitting there with nuclear weapons aboard.
Mm.
I mean, it's really quite amazing.
Yes, okay. And of course, this seminar coming up October 13th, if you're in the New York area, we couldn't urge you enough to go there. You only have about 50 seats.
That's right. So people have to call for a reservation because with limited seating.
212-645-5278. 645-5278. Robert DeSwitek, he's going to have a very interesting report on that. And to me, it's even more famous than Roswell because I just remember that headline in our little paper here in my hometown. I think it said saucers shot at in Washington or something like that.
Well, I tell you, Jerry, it was more. It got much more coverage than the Roswell case did at the time.
Uh-huh.
The Roswell case went shooting out and then right down in a matter of hours.
Hours, right.
When they put in the cover story. But this Washington thing just didn't go away. And as I remember, some of the sightings took place on two successive nights.
Yes,
but they were right there over the White House. And, it's very strange. We were having this program, but in the light of the events of September 11th and the fear for the Capitol and only
today President Bush signed an order to open up Reagan National Airport again,
right,
to limited travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, so that's just a phenomenal deal.
Yeah.
All the way. I'm going to ask you a question that I had several calls.
Mm-hmm.
Since I do UFO shows as well as other types of programs,
sure.
It's not UFO all week.
Right.
I had several calls right after that tragedy on September 11th, and people were asking me, in all seriousness, UFO listeners, about, will there be extraterrestrial intervention or things like that? And I guess that's one reason people have a lot of problems, accepting the intruders being here.
Mm-hmm.
Is because they don't really, they kind of have a prime directive, evidently.
Right. Well, the point is that we're very used to putting an unknown, like the UFO arguments, into a God's or devil's category. Either here to help or they're here to hurt. And that's the way we kind of want to see things.
And from reading between the lines here, I think you think they're more benign.
Well, I'm saying that I don't think they're here to do either. They're not here to help, and they're not here to... obviously nobody did anything to prevent
a lot of things
September 11th events, or for that matter, the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of things.
All sorts of horrors that have happened, and there's never been any sense that there was any kind of intervention that would be helpful to us.
On your research over the years, and we'll get into the intruders here in a moment, and I love that title. It's so appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Did that come to you immediately, or did that just kind of...
It's a funny thing. As with my new book that my wife Carol and I are working on, we don't have a real good title for it yet. And as with the other two books, I didn't have a title until I handed in the manuscript. And the title Missing Time, which has of course become a kind of catchphrase in this, just like Alan Hynek's Close Encounters, that came at the very last minute when I handed in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So Intruders was just a very simple title. And what
To sum it up, they're not necessarily invaders.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily saviors.
That's right.
And they're intruders.
Yeah, that's right. And uninvited. You asked about where Copley Woods was. I changed the name of Copley Woods to protect the family. But it's another woods that sounds a lot like Copley, but I changed it. Okay. And it's in the suburbs of the city of Indianapolis. But one of the problems in doing this research is that the major weapon of the debunkers is not scientific evidence or any kind of rational attack on the material and the data, but it's actually the weapon of witness intimidation. If they can use enough ridicule and enough, just really attacking their credentials and so forth, the people come forward, they can guarantee that the people who have the greatest credentials and who might be the most listened to by the public are going to be the very ones who won't come forward. And I've had, for instance, I've worked with abductees. One was a research scientist for NASA. I've worked with a number of police officers. I've worked with 8 psychiatrists who have come to me because of their own abductions. Army officers, people, well-known people in various fields, just plain folks, and so forth. But I can tell you that the higher a person is up the socioeconomic scale, the less likely that person is to come forward and present his testimony or her testimony. So I have to do a lot of concealing of names and changing names, which I always specify that I'm doing that. And because the location of this person's in intruders, Kitley Woods, as I called it, because the house had behind it this circle where the ground was sort of baked into a hard, almost rock-like substance and would not support grass. I was afraid that if I gave the actual name of the area, people would be driving around looking, poking around people's backyards.
Yeah, well, you're right, and probably in Indianapolis and that area, that wouldn't be, if you described it thoroughly, it probably wouldn't be that hard to locate.
That's the point. So I changed the name of the, I came up with Copley, partly because I'm a painter and Copley is a... He's a very fine early 19th century American painter.
Now before we get off here, Bud Hopkins, I got to find out what you paint. What do you do? Still life? Landscape?
No, I'm an abstract painter.
Okay.
And I paint, the work has had a long evolution, of course. I've been around for a long time. I had my first show, believe it or not, in 1956. When I first came to New York, I was involved with the abstract expressionist movement, which is Jackson Pollock.
What would it cost for me to get a painting from you? I mean, any kind of one to buy. Do you have a gallery?
Yeah, right. I have. I just had a show in Los Angeles, a three-person show. I just had a show here, East Coast.
I want you to realize first, before you answer that question, Bud, that I'm not trying to put a value on talent at all. I'm just trying to give the listener a
feel. The price range would be, I make some very small collages, which would be $400, something like that. Yeah. And the big paintings could be $12,000 and $15,000.
And do you have a separate location for the gallery, or is it located?
I show it commercial galleries. No, but I actually, my studio is in my building that I live in.
Okay. So they could call 212-645-5278, then that's your foundation. But
That's the office, and then that's also my studio.
So they could find out a little more information.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. When we get back here, we're going to take another 6-minute break at the bottom of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give you about 20-25 minutes here to talk to us about some of the things that are dear to you as far as the the research you've been doing. I mean, after two decades and a half, I'm sure there's some things you'd like to get out.
Oh, lots of things to talk about.
Yeah, right. And then I got a couple of questions, and we'll have some from the audience, too. 682-2233, 1-918-682-2233. Call right after the guy starts giving the sports scores, because we'll have a couple of commercials after that, and we'll be back.
And incidentally, I'd love to hear anybody's experiences or sightings.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't even mentioned that tonight.
I'd love to hear,
I consider myself spanked. That'd be one of the reasons you ought to be doing the show. So look for new blood, new
ideas. That's one of the most interesting parts of doing this, yeah.
Yeah. 918-682-2233. If you've been abducted, let us know. Okay, now I'm going to give you the phone numbers here again to call. After the sports, it'll be a good time to call. 682-2233. And, of course, you're listening on a computer someplace. That's 1-918-682-2233. Our guest is Bud Hopkins, and, of course, he has the Intruders Foundation. Great website. And that's at intrudersfoundation.org.
Fine. It's guaranteed 4-9-30.
And as far as the weather is concerned, it's going to be nice in the daytime. A little cool as we get toward the weekend. Frost by Sunday morning. Thunder showers could move in here tomorrow as late as early afternoon. 82 before the showers move in. The high on Friday only 64. Overnight low 50. 42 on Saturday morning. And a little frosty on Sunday morning, and that is the weather. Now, here's our telephone number if you'd like to ask our guest, Bud Hopkins, a question. 918-682-2233 if you're listening on a computer somewhere. And our email address is pippinshow@excite.com, P-I-P-P-I-N-S-H-O-W at excite.com.
For Greeting Cards of America.
UFO abduction researcher and well-noted author and lecturer Bud Hopkins is on the line from New York City with the Intruders Foundation. His latest book is called Witnessed, the True Story of the Brooklyn Bridge Abduction Case. And, Bud, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back.
Now, we were talking a little bit about the situation in Indianapolis, right outside Indianapolis, for the Intruders. What about those visitations? Was something in that stood out or jumped out?
This was extremely crucial new information, because from the very beginning of our knowledge of the abduction phenomenon, back to the Betty Barney Hill case, we were aware that there was a, let's say, reproductive aspect of the aliens' interest in human beings. And Betty had described Betty Hill, a needle being placed in her navel, and she was told it was very painful. She was told it was a pregnancy test, which, of course, doesn't make any sense. And this was, incidentally, long before amniocentesis was developed, which is quite interesting, because now it's a very routine thing for doctors to take the amniotic fluid by going in through the navel. But that was only an alien technique back in 61 when that happened. Barney Hill, even that was never mentioned in a book, had a sperm sample taken from him when he was on the examining table in the UFO. So we knew about this, that there was that reproductive interest. But what happened was in 1983, as I was investigating this Indianapolis case, a woman I called Kathy Davis, it turned out that she began speaking very emotionally about the fact that she had had a pregnancy, which was very unusual that she had gotten pregnant. She had not been sexually active hardly at all, and that the pregnancy disappeared, and that those two events were connected, the getting pregnant and having the pregnancy disappear, were connected with certain memories she had of a UFO aspect of some kind of incident. But she also had this extremely vivid memory, or a dream, she wasn't sure, of being shown at some later point a small child. And the small child, she was told, was hers, and that it was not fully human. It was a mix of herself and the aliens. And, of course, all of this sounded outrageous, and yet all along I had been getting reports from people suggesting that ova and sperm samples were being routinely taken.
Well, now, do you think that, did she have some missing time where she had...
Oh, yes.
...actually gave the birth to the baby, or was the baby taken
out
of the womb?
No, the baby was removed at some point, probably in the third trimester. The third month of the first trimester. And she had no bleeding and no sense of a miscarriage, but she knew in the morning that she was no longer pregnant, and found out, in fact, she was no longer pregnant. And I began to find...
Well, do you think it's some kind of Hitler complex for a super race, or do you think they just can't reproduce?
Well, again, we don't know. You see, the fact that this is going on, that they're doing this, seems to me beyond doubt at this point, but as to what the motives are and what their problems are, we can only speculate.
Buddy, you got any idea what happens to the babies? Do they stay with the spaceships?
Yes, exactly. They stay with the craft. We also have a lot of reason to believe that many of these, let's say, genetically engineered mixes are not working out. In other words, there are serious problems with
why do you base that? That's an interesting statement. Why do you say that?
Well, people have been shown infants that seem to be, the phrase babies that don't thrive. In other words, they seem to be filled with lassitude, quiet. They don't look healthy. They don't seem to move much. Sometimes people have been shown babies that are quite deformed, as if certain aspects of their bodies have not developed normally. And it would seem that whatever this program is, that it's not some kind of absolutely efficient...
Even though this race of extraterrestrials probably is far advanced of us...
Yeah.
They've got the problem that it just doesn't
take every time.
You're right. It's in other words, that's a pretty scary thought there. What happens to these children? I wonder.
Yeah, and also exactly, and also numerous people have described being in a craft and taken into a room and showed, and they were shown things that looked like tanks, incubating tanks in which developing fetuses were floating. And
maybe it's just as simple as they should allow them to stay in their human host till full term. I wonder why they don't.
Well, the interesting thing is that the UFO occupants seem to feel that there's something magical about human touch and about the maternal instinct. And if you look at it this way, if you can imagine that, and this is pure speculation, that the alien race, whatever they are, have not had to reproduce in the normal way for centuries or whatever, and that all their offspring are produced in vitro, in other words, they're all test tube babies or whatnot, if that's the case... then the maternal instinct might have atrophied and
disappeared from
the sexual instinct, and therefore, because we have such really powerful maternal and paternal feelings for our children, and of course we have such strong sexual instincts for one another, that maybe these are qualities which they want to reintroduce in their particular evolutionary position, wherever they are. I mean, this is speculation, but something like that may be very possible.
You know, following that line of speculation along, then this race could be very old chronologically.
Well, certainly their technology is incredibly advanced over ours.
Mm-hmm.
But then,
I was thinking more of the inhabitants themselves. What are they, little grays, or are they different types of people?
Well, the gray figures are, I've always said they're... About 85% of the reports are of the gray figures. And even when we get reports, as in the Travis Walton case, of very human-looking figures who seem quite, well-constructed and handsome and so forth, they're actually right there with grays cooperating, doing the same thing together.
Yeah. I've had Travis on two or three times over the years.
Wonderful guy.
Uh-huh. And he seems to be going through a little metamorphosis. This last time I interviewed him, he was kind of, he seemed to think maybe there was a little more evil going on than he thought originally.
Well, you see, in terms of evil, I mean, one has to assume the possibility that the ultimate goal here is it's not going to be a happy outcome for human beings. I mean, that is certainly a very logical reading of the data as we have it. You see, we're not getting right now any sense that they are deliberately hurting people. In other words, if they take a child out of the bed and at night, and the child is extremely frightened and put on a table and examined and poked and prodded and so forth, they do something to reassure the child that they won't be hurt and they'll be taken back and so forth, and the child is tucked back in bed. And incidentally, I should point out that sometimes the child is put back wearing somebody else's pajamas.
Really? Now, I hadn't heard that before, bud.
Well, I've got many cases where a person is abducted at night, we'll say, and obviously they're then stripped inside the ship for the examination and these procedures. And if there are a number of people in the ship, sometimes that they get one another's clothes on by mistake.
So in other words, these people may be advanced, but they still are capable of bungling.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. People, I mean, there are many, many, many bungles. People are put back in the wrong beds, in the wrong rooms in the houses, or even sometimes in the wrong house. The car is put down in one case after a car had been taken, lifted up. It was put down in the middle of a field with some trees around, and there was no way for the car to get out of the field. They had to cut down a couple of trees, which
Now, these bunkers would have problems with that one.
Yeah, oh, but they all come up with something. See, if you're a true believer, as these debunkers are, you'll find a reason. You'll say, maybe it was never put down there that way, and people just lied, you know, or something. They'll come up with something, because they have to defend their ideology, and they will do anything, some of them at least.
You're talking about the debunkers.
The debunkers, yes.
To make sure their theory works.
Yeah, that this is not accepted. Of course, what we're asking, I was incidentally gave a lecture once in Westchester County, and I was contacted by a man who said he was from the Westchester Skeptical Society, and he invited me to come and debate with him. And I said, I don't do debates. I said, I don't go and debate. I said, we've been having nothing but debates over all these years, and it hasn't gotten us anywhere. But I said, I'll tell you what I will do. I said, if you have a psychiatrist who is a skeptic or whatever in your group, and he's interested in actually investigating a case with me from whatever premise he wants to operate from, I said, let him get in touch with me, and we'll look into it together. I said, let's do a joint investigation. Let's not do sitting trying to, you know, make debaters' points against one another.
Westchester Skeptical Society.
And they never replied to me.
Yeah, they were skeptical.
they don't want to do an investigation.
I understand what you're saying.
They want to sit there and tell you all the points why this can't be. This can't be because you can't get here from there, wherever there is, and you can't travel in space, and aliens wouldn't look like this, and et cetera, et cetera. They have a list of things. And in other words, they're arguing from the point of view of theory, and they're trying to make their theories refute our data. Doesn't work.
Now, we're talking with Bud Hopkins, folks, of the IntrudersFoundation.org, and he's a well-known author, written several books. We'll run over them again here in a moment before the show is over. But, you know, of all of the abductee research you've done, has anything downright comical ever come up?
Well,
the reason I ask that is, you know, you're talking about the pajamas being on the wrong...
Well, we have one there that was a woman, actually she was just visiting here this past weekend, she lived in Ohio at the time, and she had bought a new nightgown she was very proud of, a Victoria's Secret nightgown, and she went to bed, and she woke up in the morning knowing that something had happened. She had dim memories, you know, the typical kind of fragment of memories. And she realized she was wearing some big, bulky, green man's T-shirt.
I'd like to see the man.
Which made out the man was there when he woke up.
Who said that this research business is all dull?
Well, but funny things do happen sometimes.
Well, the reason I even wanted to bring that up is, you know, we sometimes are accused of trying to scare people to death or whatever about these subjects, and like you say, there's your research, I guess, doesn't show any intentional harm, even though harm has happened, right?
Yes, that's exactly well put, yeah. The thing is about scaring people to death, I mean, there's obviously no way that you can talk about this without it having a certain pretentious overtone to it.
For sure.
There's no way. But the point is that, as I say, so far there has been no sign of overt malevolence on their part, and so we don't know what's ultimately going to happen. And in the meantime, as I tell people I work with, abductees who've been through this, I always think that living well is the best revenge. In other words, a little humor, enjoying life in all of its wonderful aspects. I go to the Metropolitan Museum and the Museum of Modern Art, something like that, probably every single week, because I need to sort of clear out the cobwebs and look at something that's moving and beautiful to me. And humor is, of course, one of the wonderful things that can help do that.
Now, the next seminar will be October 13th there in New York City. Did you say 128th or 28th?
It's 28th Street, 150 West 28th Street. Yeah.
212-645-5278 if you'd like to call to make a reservation. And if you don't have a chance to write that down, just remember intrudersfoundation.org, and the information is there.
And if the people have an account of some experience that they've had or that they question, they don't understand exactly, and virtually nobody ever writes and says, boom, I'm an abductee, this has happened to me. People will say, I don't know whether I'm wasting your time, but I've had these strange things happen, I don't know what they really mean, et cetera, et cetera. As a matter of fact, I just read two very moving letters today that I got with that particular tone. But we're always willing to hear from people.
Anyway, it's 7:54 here at KBIX Radio, talking with Bud Hopkins. It's 8:54 where he is in New York. You have these seminars once a month, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the books are Witness, The True Story of the Brooklyn Bridge Abduction, Intruders, The Incredible Visitations at Comedy Woods, which you told me was made a different name, and mm-hmm. Missing Time, Documentation Study of the UFO Abductions.
And incidentally, Intruders was made into, I thought, a very effective miniseries on CBS. A few years ago.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear an author say that he liked what they did. You know,
yeah, I know. It was kind of amazing. That it was radically changed, but the what was true about it was the emotional truth and the truth of the plot line.
Right, well, it was a miniseries.
Yeah, it was a miniseries. and my role as the investigator was turned into two different investigators.
There was no actor big enough in Hollywood to play you. Who did
well,
that?
Well, and now that Hermione Gingold is dead, I guess there's nobody. actually, it was Richard Crenna, and the other actors, actresses, Mare Whittingham was a wonderful young actress.
I used to look kind of like Richard Crenna in a way. We have a fan of yours and our producer on the line, and he's just across the river from you up there.
Okay.
But say hello to Larry Dickin for a moment. Larry, go ahead and say hello to Bud.
Hello, Bud.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You had a great show tonight.
Good. Well, it was a very, very intelligent interview, I have to say. I think the questions were very well...
You guys humble me here.
Very well phrased. And
I do have a message for you, Bud.
Okay.
Is you were looking for that nightgown?
Mm-hmm.
I've got it.
You got it? Oh, boy.
I had heard that before.
Yeah.
I didn't want to spread it around on the air, Larry.
Well, do you look really cute in it? That's what I want to know.
Well, maybe we'll find out next week, but I think I might get a chance to get over to the conference, and if I don't make
you better make the one in November, I tell you.
I definitely want to make that other one on that Air Force Base.
Okay. Hey, Bud, thanks very much. We've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
Okay. That's Bud Hopkins, and we will be back here in a moment with Larry Dickin, and he will be doing some sightings for us. And a few other things as we talk UFOs for another hour on our UFO Wednesday night special, which is normally we do this on Thursday nights, but this week we have a ball game tomorrow night.